the last class up to the 13th samskara, starting from Garbhadhanam, Pumsavanam, Simantam, these three prenatal samskaras, and Jatakarma, Namakarna, Annaprashana, Chaula, and Upanayana, these five, making it 8 samskaras, and then 4 Veda Vratas, making it 12, and Samavartana, the conclusion of the Brahmacharya Ashrama, making it 13. So we have completed 13 samskaras so far. Now today we are going to take up the next important samskara, the 14th samskara, the Vivaha samskara, or the marriage samskara. And by getting into this ashrama, the second ashrama, a person can choose to enter or not to enter this samskara, this grahastha ashrama, according to his qualification and not according to his raga dvesha. The shastras accept whether a person can either come into the grahastha ashrama or he need not have to come into the grahastha ashrama. Both are accepted by the shastras. But for a person who wants to enter into the sannyasa ashrama, there is a separate qualification needed, and that qualification is vairagya. He should have dispassion. So here the choice whether a person has to get married or not get married is one's choice based on one's qualification after completing the Brahmacharya Ashrama. And now let us see what is the meaning of the word Vivaha. To signify this Vivaha, this marriage, there are actually 4 words. One is Vivaha itself. Another it is Udvahaha. And the third one is called Kanyaka Danam. And the fourth word signifying the same samskara is Kalyana. Kalyana is actually the most commonly used word, Kalyana. So the first 2 words, namely Vivaha and Udvaha, both mean nearly the same. Visheshena Vahati Iti Vivaha. Visheshena Vahati. And for Udvaha, Urdvam Vahati Iti Udvaha. So that is how they are defined. And when we take the first word Vivaha, Visheshena means a special way. And Urdvam, Udvaha, Urdvam Vahati, that means to lift a person. Till now, this person was a brahmachari. He was single. He was leading an individual life. He was engrossed only in study of scriptures and so many other things. It is, you know, it is easy, very, no responsibilities at all. Somebody was taking care of him. And his own desires and whims and fancies, they were all there to some extent. And now on, this person cannot live an isolated life. So that is why it has become a special life, Visheshena. So his life is interlinked with the life of another person. So he is symbolically yoked, as it were. Actually, in the marriage, there is a samskara where, in South Indian marriages particularly, where they put a yoke, the yoke that ties together the 2 bulls when it has to run a cart. So they put that yoke symbolically on the head to signify that the life is going to be one which is going to be pulled together by both the members, the husband and wife. So they are entering another life, the married life, that is signified by symbolically by putting this yoke on top of the head. So both together, they determine the life now on. Whether it is good things, bad things, everything together, whatever they share. So there is a Visheshena so Vahati. That is why it's called Vivaha. And if it is Udvaha, then upliftment in one's life. He is uplifting his life also. Urdvam vahati. Through what? Through the grahastha ashrama. By entering into the grahastha ashrama, he is uplifting himself. Why? Because up to now, this person had no adhikaritvam for any karma except doing sandhyavandana karma and also maybe doing samidadhanam and those things. This person did not have any adhikaritvam, eligibility to do any other karma. So brahmacharinaha karmani adhikaraha nasti. There is no adhikaritvam for this person to do any other karma. But now on, after marriage, he can do all these karmas which can lead a person to get dharma praptihi, punya praptihi, chitta shuddhi praptihi. All those things this person can acquire now on. So he is going to uplift his life by doing so many noble karmas from now on. So udvahaha. Also kula dharma. He is going to maintain, he is going to propagate his own lineage, the parampara. He will get good children, dharma praja abhivridhyartham. He is going to marry for getting good children, dharma praja, who will follow this dharma, this tradition. If it is not done, kulakshaye pranashyanti, kuladharma sanatanaha. That's what Krishna says. So for the anadikala parampara, he will maintain by getting married and giving rise to good children. But such botheration was not there for the brahmachari. But once he enters into the grahastha ashrama, he has this responsibility to maintain the kula dharma. So dharma abhivritti, praja abhivritti, so all those things, they become part of this particular samskara. So it is udvahaha. It uplifts the person by doing all these noble karmas and make him eligible for getting chitta shuddhi and so many other benefits. And the third name is Kanyaka Dhanam. We are now looking at the various names for the Vivaha Samskara. The third name is Kanyaka Dhanam. The father, he gives away as a gift, as a dhanam, his daughter, the Kanya, to the Vara. The husband, the person, boy. So a gift, yeah, it's supposed to be the greatest gift. We are going to see that thing later. So the father is giving away his daughter as a gift to the boy in marriage. That's why it's also called Kanyaka Dhanam. And the fourth term is Kalyanam. Whatever is auspicious is called Kalyanam. It is a noble act. It is a holy act. It's a sacred ceremony. So it brings mangalam to the family, to everybody. So it is also called Kalyanam. So Vivaha is sacred because it gives what? Dharmam and Punyam. It gives Punyam to the father to give away his daughter as Dhanam. And the couple could now maintain Dharma, Kula Dharma and all Dharmas they are able to maintain. So because of Dharma Abhivriddhi, the Vivaha is considered very sacred also. So it is Kalyanam. Also from the Vedantic angle, if one looks at it, then the moment the person takes this grahastha ashrama, this is an inevitable ashrama for what? For chitta shuddhi and maturity. Unless a person gets chitta shuddhi, purity of the mind, and also chitta ekagrata, the oneness of the mind, the person will not be able to go through jnana marga and ultimately gain moksha. But in grahastha ashrama, this person gains lot of patience. In brahmachari ashrama, he has no patience at all. Brahmachari has no patience. But as a grahastha, he has to definitely cultivate patience. Because the wife says something, children say something, brothers and sisters might say something. So many things might happen. They may be all conflicting. This person has to develop a lot of patience and then come to a good conclusion and try to maintain the integrity of the family. So brahmachari could have a lot of roughness. So there could be a lot of spokes here and there. dealing with the brahmachari. Whereas with the grahastashrami, such things cannot be there. So over a period of time, if it is not there maybe in the beginning, so over a period of time, the person will gain that patience. You know, normally they say the first 10 years of married life, I am in control. And the next 10 years, we are in control. And afterwards, everything is her control. So that is how the person slowly, he resigns to the fact that he has to develop patience. And this is a great ability to develop chitta shuddhi. Then what is the case if he enters into the sannyasa ashrama directly? For example, from brahmachari ashrama. In grahastha ashrama, he can develop all these patience and everything. But if he goes directly into the sannyasa ashrama, directly from the brahmachari ashrama, then this person would have developed this quality in his previous janma. So that is why he had the liking to get into the sannyasa ashrama at this time itself, from directly from the brahmachari ashrama, and he had the qualification acquired from his previous janma so that he can become eligible to become a sannyasi. So all these four names, they indicate the glory of the grahastha ashrama. Yatha vayu samashritya vartante sarva jantavaha tatha grahastham ashritya vartante sarve ashramaha. As all the creations, vartante sarva jantavaha, all the creations, they live based on what? Samashritya vayu samashritya, based on vayu. Without wind, no creation can survive. Similarly, tatha grahastham ashritya, depending on the grahastha ashrama, grahastha ashramim, all sarve ashramaha, all other ashramas, whether it is brahmachari ashrama, vanaprastha ashrama, or sannyasa ashrama, all the other ashramas, they survive based on the grahastha ashrami alone. So grahastha ashrama gives an ideal opportunity for a person to serve the society. He can serve the society, whereas all other ashramas, whether it is brahmachari ashrama, vanaprastha ashrama, sannyasa ashrama, they don't serve the way a grahastha ashrama directly serves the society. So service itself is a cause for purity, chitta shuddhi, because service itself is a great instrument through which a person can gain chitta shuddhi, purity of mind. That is why chaunakohavaim mahashalaha. Mahashalaha means mahagrahastaha. These are all people who are mahagrahastaha, because lot of responsibilities and so much of opportunities to gain chitta shuddhi and chitta ekagrata, and finally lead a person to follow the jnana marga. So definition of vivaha, udvaha, kanyakadhanam, kalyanam, all those things we have seen now. And the next question would be, what is the purpose of this vivaha samskara? The purpose of this samskara. Then we have to now look at it from all directions, the purpose of this. This is dharmartham, arthartham, kamartham, mokshartham. For all these, whether it is for the gaining dharma, or artha, material well-being, kama, all desires fulfilling, and moksha. For all of them, this particular grahastha ashrama is utilized. That's the purpose of this. Now, for example, if you really look at the institution of marriage, marriage is what? It is union of a male and female. The union of a male and female is driven essentially by a natural instinct. It's a natural instinct for a male and female to get together. And in the process, kama is getting fulfilled. So it takes care of kama, the desire. But as human beings, even though that's a natural instinct, as human beings, we are evolved. We are not just like animalistic people, even though we are also considered social animals. But we are evolved people, we are samskrita purushaha, refined people. So they have made this kama karma, this karma which is again driven by desire, this kama karma into a very purified samskara, very beautiful samskara. So that is what this is done. So we continue to be animal only, socially or whichever way it is, but kama prerita karma. So this is a kama. So it's considered, converted to a beautiful samskara. We were to evolve from an animalistic person to a refined person, a samskrita purushaha, and this evolution is disciplined through the adoption of these various ashramas, and this grahastha ashrama is an essential ashrama where a person, now he becomes part of a society with his responsibilities to society, to himself, to his family and the community. So that is the first purpose. And the second one is arthartham. So first is kamartham, and the second one is arthartham, for the sake of gaining lot of things. So there is a security involved in the institution of marriage. Security now and later also, because the life, now what he is going to live. For example, the moment that he goes to office and comes back home, there is somebody to give a coffee to him. So there is somebody looking forward to this person coming back. So all those things are all there. And, you know, he also has got a mechanism by which he can exhaust himself, exhaust his feelings. Whatever he cannot do at work with the boss, he can come and perhaps share with his wife. And the vice versa, same thing, the wife to the husband. So there are so many ways by which a person can share. So there is a sense of security. There is a sense of belonging. Whether it is crying, shouting, or laughing, or enjoying, all these things together. So these are all things. So there is it creates a balance of mind. The center of gravity maintains between the partners of marriage. The mind, it cannot, you know, stand rough weather at all the time. So one definitely needs a place where the mind can get quietened. So that way for you know, whether it is gaining money, gaining yoga and kshema, accumulating things, and then protecting whatever you have accumulated. So all those things, financial security, all those things, they become part of the marriage institution. He takes all this insurance and all to protect himself and also the family later, and also wife, everybody. So all those things driven by that security given by the artha, the material well-being. So arthartham marriage. And then dharmartham marriage. The very purpose of marriage is for what? Dharma praja abhivridhyartham. Imam kanyam varene. See, the marriage itself, the mantra is like this. I marry this girl for what? For dharma praja abhivridhyartham. Dharma praja abhivridhyartham. So for the purpose of getting dharma praja. Dharma actually, you know, is given only a particular this thing here, not kama and artha. Dharma praja only, not kama praja abhivridhyartham or artha praja abhivridhyartham. Only dharma praja abhivridhyartham, I get this marriage. And also as part of the marriage, I get three of my indebtedness, rinas, fulfilled. What are those things we have already mentioned earlier in some other context? There are this, anybody when he is born, he has got these three rinas, this indebtedness, debts. What are those? This daiva rina, pitru rina, and rishi rina. We are indebted to all the devatas. They have provided this entire million star hotel for us, for a very comfortable living. This entire world with all its riches is provided to us by the devatas. And then we are indebted to the rishis, the sages who have given the scriptures to us, which guides us what to do, what not to do, what is dharma, it teaches us. So that is, we are indebted to the rishis. And we are indebted to our ancestors, Pitrurina, who have given this life, this entire parampara, this lineage. So we are indebted to all three of them. And to take care of our indebtedness to the rishis, Brahmacharya Ashrama, we can do it right there itself. Because by studying the Vedas and propagating the Vedas, conducting our lifestyle according to what is prescribed in the Shastras, one can fulfill the debt, whatever is the indebtedness, Rina, for the rishis. But the pitru rina, the rina to the ancestors, what we owe to a ben, we give rise to good children. good children who will then propagate this dharma. So pitrinam is fulfilled by putrotpatti. So putrotpattyam pitrinam and yagaihi devarinam. By doing yagas, yajnas, all this worship, all these rituals, a person fulfills devarinam. So all these three indebtedness, they get fulfilled by the institution of marriage, and that is another reason why one gets married. This is dharmartham. So kamartham marriage, arthartham vivaha, and dharmartham vivaha, and finally mokshartham also. For the sake of gaining moksha, the first requirement is what? We have to gain chitta shuddhi, purity of the mind. And that is provided only in the grahastha ashrama. So person gains chitta shuddhi, and from there he can go to vanaprastha ashrama, where he can do meditation. So the transition from grahastha ashrama to vanaprastha ashrama will be smooth. He will have enough patience, enough chitta shuddhi, so that he can reflect upon what he studies and what he can study in from the shastras, to again uplift himself in the jnana marga through sannyasa marga, and finally reach moksha also. So everyone, so grahastha ashrama is necessary for so many people, but normally, you know, when in the homes, this is a very common dialogue between parents and children. Parents normally tell the children, no, you are already this much age, you have to get married, definitely you have to, grahastha ashrama is very noble, you have to get married, and they will keep on pampering the, you know, bugging the children to get married. And the child, because they will say, the shastras tell, the Vedas tell, grahastha ashrama is important, you have to get married. The child can ask back, perhaps the same Vedas also have told vanaprastha ashrama is important and sannyasa ashrama is important, when are you going to go to the forest? He can ask the father back, because all of them are supported in the shastras, whereas the ultimate goal is not grahastha ashrama or getting a wife or children or any of those things. The ultimate goal is Ishvara prapti. Finally, I should gain moksha. Ishvara prapti means I should gain moksha here, and that is the particular, that is the only goal. All others are all intermediary goals, to get a good wife, to get good children, good job, good house. They are all good goals, but they are all intermediary goals only. The ultimate goal is to go to moksha, and the requirement for gaining moksha is provided, is seeded here in the grahastha ashrama, first by giving chitta shuddhi and slowly giving chitta ekagrata, and finally a person prepares himself in the vanaprastha ashrama to gain moksha, ultimately Ishvara prapti. So the person has to take, he has to take something, he has to grow and drop. He has to take grahastha ashrama, he has to grow and drop grahastha ashrama. Again take vanaprastha ashrama, there again grow by gaining all this knowledge and doing meditation, chitta ekagrata, everything. And then he has to drop that and take sannyasa ashrama, and then leave everything ultimately to gain moksha. So that is the final requirement for this entire life, is to gain moksha. So the marriage as an institution, it serves the kama purushartha, artha purushartha, dharma purushartha, and moksha purushartha also. So that is the purpose of this married life. Then the another most tricky question is, who should choose the wife or the husband? Who should choose? According to our tradition, it is best chosen by the parents, not by the son or the daughter. These are all what is given in the scriptures. One should be very careful. It is not what I am advocating or anything. Be careful. The scriptures, according to the scriptures, it says it is best chosen, whether it's a boy or girl, is best chosen by the parents. Why? We have to understand why. There is no doubt the individual can choose. Whomsoever getting married can choose. Father also can choose. The mother, parents can choose. But because of lack of maturity, sufficient maturity, the choice will be based, if the individual chooses, the choice may be based mostly on raga dvesha or kama. and rarely artha and dharma, and mostly not moksha. So if an individual chooses, the choice will be based mostly on raga dvesha, likes and dislikes, are driven by kama, desire. Okay, this person is so and so, is so very beautiful and all that. And rarely, okay, so and so is very rich, artha, and dharma sometimes, very rarely, dharma, and very, very, very rarely, moksha. So among the four purusharthas, the choice if the individual tries to make will be essentially driven by this raga dvesha and kama only predominantly. But if son chooses, mostly based on this will be the case, son or daughter. But if the parents choose, so either because of maturity, the father because, you know, he has led so much of life, you know, all that thing. Son has 30 years of married life, 25 years of married life. It has refined this person either because of maturity or maybe bitter experience. Oh, I got into a marriage like this. Let not my son get into a marriage like the way like I have gone through. Perhaps because of his own experience, the father or the parents, they will be able to look at from various other angles also, not just to be driven by this raga dvesha. They will be mostly basing that decision based on dharma, artha, and perhaps moksha angle also. So it is preferable, according to that is why in our system, according to the tradition, it is preferable for the elders to choose. That is how they have chosen. And the elders will look at so many things, so many factors. And once they think, okay, so and so person would be suitable to this family and to my child, then they let the children meet. And then once the children meet and also they have some opportunity to exchange some views, then they fix the marriage. Now we have the question, how can a father choose or a parent choose, then, you know, how to marry an unknown person? These are all questions we will have. How can the parent choose a person for me? And also, how can a person marry a totally unknown person, a total stranger? So these are all questions we normally have, because we look at compatibility issues. Because if two persons have to marry, then there should be compatibility. That's what we think. For example, the Gandharva method, where, you know, they allow each other and then they exchange whatever ideas they have between each other and then think, okay, and I am suitable for him and she is suitable for me. All those things they go through. So to avoid this compatibility problem, this Gandharva kind of method, where they will move and all that things, you know, normally we have the joke here, you know, a person, they moved together for 7 years and then lived together for another 7 years and then finally got married for, you know, so many things happened, got married, and then finally they lived together after marriage for maybe a few months. So that is how sometimes things change, because fundamentally the problem of compatibility is because compatibility is based on certain likes and dislikes. And these tastes of liking certain thing or not liking certain things, they change for every individual. They are not constant at all. They keep on changing. So they will move each other. People will go all these things. There is the problem is never possible to know in depth the character by moving with a person for 3 months, 4 months, 1 year or 2 years, even sometimes the in-depth character is very difficult to be known. Even after 25 years of marriage, always people say, my wife is a mystery or my husband is a mystery. People still keep telling, we hear those things. It is very, very difficult to know in-depth the person in a person. So there may be, you know, judgment can be based on a few things, you know, for example, we like the same thing, we have the same taste, we like the same food, we like the same movie, perhaps the same music. All those things, they are all based on superficial likings. The same liking may go away and change to something else later. So that is one issue when somebody looks at this compatibility thing. And even if there is compatibility of, for example, character, compatibility of so many things, then the person may change, the character may change for that person, because, you know, like the individuals with their own prarabdha, things, their character also might even change, because it is driven by prarabdha also. The interest may change. All those things might change. So if compatibility is to be considered as a criterion, if that is not there, it will lead to divorce. So whatever they think originally as compatible, based on certain tastes and whatever other things, after certain number of years, if those things change, then the strain may be so much, the adjustability may not be there, and they may tend to separate. So that is one risk. And in our tradition, we understood that perfect compatibility of two minds, individual minds, is very, very difficult. It is never possible at all. Our system understood this long ago. The perfect compatibility of the minds of two individuals is very difficult to gain. So marriage should not be dependent upon compatibility. That is how our institution was developed in the tradition. So in spite of lack of compatibility, the marriage should continue, because they did not look at marriage as just only a relationship between two individuals. It is for the propagation of this entire lineage of this parampara, kula parampara. So it is not just two individuals got into a contract and got married. It is actually two families. They came together. Two communities came together, so it is the entire system, they come together. So they look at it from that angle. So each should understand that, you know, each individual can have their own ragadveshas. Because that you cannot question that. When I am born, I have come with certain things. My own prarabdha has pushed me into this janma. So I, as an individual, I have my own likes, I have my own dislikes, and my wife also has the same. I should be able to acknowledge that fact, that the wife and husband are also individuals, and their likes and dislikes can change also. So this is something that we should learn to understand. And also, the system looks at all these things, and some kind of compatibility is also looked for in the tradition. They use for this the astrology, the horoscope, as a tool to find out how compatible two individuals could be, and to so that they could be matched. But as was mentioned earlier, to find 100% compatibility of two minds is very, very, very difficult, very remote. But by and large, 70%, 80%, 60%. So they go through this analyzing the horoscope of individuals and try to find out whether there could be match within, you know, the maximum percentage possible. So they use this astrology as a tool to find out the compatibility of this thing. But ultimately, what is the thing that should be borne in mind? Regardless of compatibility, the person should think, she is my wife or he is my husband. I have to love her or him. And love becomes unconditional. So all other things like compatibility, etc., can be conditional. But when I learn to love a person, that love becomes unconditional, and that marriage system will work. But people might take advantage of certain things, and they ill treat the wife, and some ill treat the husband. All those things might happen. But generally, the tradition expected this thing, and that is how they evolved a system based on what the scriptures advocated to them. And the next condition is, so the compatibility and all, the next condition for the choice is dharma, artha, and kama should be taken into account also. When two individuals have to be brought together, the angle should be thought from the point of view of dharma, artha, and kama also. But most important thing is dharma. It is not the physical beauty, the good status, or the money a person has, but what they have given more importance is for the character. Without a person having a proper character, without character, whether the person can be so rich, so educated, whatever may be, they are all considered useless for mental peace. because at the end of the day, after marriage, a person would like to have shanti. He wants to have peace of mind. So your character, if it is not there, then that is not going to give peace of mind. So a poor dharmic family is always better than a rich adharmic family. That is why character was considered most important ingredient in the institution of marriage. So scriptures, they give enormous account for this particular thing of character. So artha, that is for, they are all impermanent. Artha is material wealth. That is impermanent. It's not permanent. Dharma eva gacchantam anugacchati. That's what scriptures say. So the dharma, here it refers to the character of a person, that is considered very, very important to choose between two individuals. Also, the third, another criterion they have used to have the choice of the person, the boy or the girl for marriage, is savarnaha. Savarnaha should belong to the same caste. See, many of these things are not valid in today's system. But we are now trying to understand the institution of marriage in our system, and the marriage is a samskara. So savarna was considered. Savarna means caste. See, this is the same caste. So people, the two people should be from the same caste preferably. So if that is the case, there is no argument, because the same tradition in both the families. So this based, then it should be based only on character now, because all other things would be mostly matching. The character will be the thing. So samana varnaha, that will be the best, that will be the best situation to be in. And why they consider that as the important thing? Because it's not given because other castes are inferior. We have to understand that very clearly. When we say it should be between the same two castes, it is not because the other caste is inferior or superior. It's not because of that. We are not that short-sighted, because our scriptures, they never emphasized on any of these things at all, superiority or inferiority among human beings. Each one in the society has a role to play. As we, I don't know whether we had discussed about Varna Dharma somewhere anytime earlier. Maybe when I talked in Gita chapters, maybe I might have spoken a little bit. But Varna Dharma is not based on superiority or inferiority of anybody. It is only a kind of job description of a person. What is the role or status in society in terms of carrying out the locomotion of the societal well-being? So that is the reason. So the same varna should be chosen, because savarna should be based on dharma acharaha. Each family will follow their achara, their own discipline, their own tradition. So every varna has a way of life. There is a brahmana's way of life. There is a kshatriya's way of life, vaishya's way of life. Each one have their own ways of life. And the boy is grown up in, for example, in that particular way of life, tradition. And if the girl is also grown up in the similar way of life, similar tradition, then there will be better understanding and appreciation of each other's roles and each other's habits. So more so with the children. For example, if the father belongs to one particular varna, comes from one set of traditional values, the mother comes from another varna, comes from another set of traditional practices, the children, they now get confused whom to follow. Father wants to follow his system, mother wants to follow her system. Then the children get confused and they may not follow any one of them. So especially with religion, at least with respect to different varna is one thing. If the father is Christian, mother is, you know, Hindu or whatever other ways, then they don't know which system to follow. And at that, if these are all for people who want to follow our dharmic lifestyle and our lifestyle based on our tradition. For those who are not interested in following this kind of tradition, that doesn't matter to them. But for those who really want to follow, this will be more convenient if they follow a system which is uniform for both the boy and girl. For example, if you have a company and if you want to have for a particular job, you need an engineer. But the doctor person looks very nice. We cannot hire a doctor for doing the job of an engineer, because that is how the system, you know, it will not lend itself in the long run. It's not going to be very useful. So based on so many of these factors, the marriage institution started to develop the coming together union of this boy and girl. And next important thing is Sagotra is barred. People belonging to the same gotra is prohibited. So same gotra or sapravaraha, the same lineage. So when we recite this Abhivadaya mantra, when you talk about your lineage, starting from your Rishi Parampara and all that thing, when we recite, they do not want the same gotra to be there for both the boy and girl. Based on so many factors, some of them even medical factors, they base on so many things. So the close relatives, they don't encourage them in getting married, close relatives. Actually, even in the plant systems, it seems the trees and all that thing, the seed, if it falls and it goes far away from the tree and becomes another sapling, that is considered better than that seed falling right under the tree and becomes a sapling under the same tree. So that is why, you know, the seed is the all the trees and all, they grow by the banks of the river. So the seed, they fall into the river. River takes away farther down and then washes away in the shore somewhere else. And there it becomes another tree. So that way, you know, even the trees and plants and all. And there is, you know, for in some kind of plants, there is this fluffy kind of a thing, like, you know, we call it this pollen kind of thing, you know, it flies. And it goes to a faraway place and then get, you know, it starts to grow another plant in that place. For example, even certain races like the Ptolemaic race in Egypt, that because they were all marrying all the same family, so it didn't survive for long. So they think in the marriage system, people belonging to the same gotra to be avoided. But again, we have to understand, those days, those people who belong to the same gotra and all, they were all living in a close by place. And at that time, you know, they were not too far. They never migrated from one country to another country and all, as that's happening today. So they were all together in neighboring places or in the same village and all that. So the chances of getting married in the same gotra, that they could control, because, you know, it was all in the same area and the limited space kind of thing. Whereas now things are changed. So, you know, but we have to understand the tradition had even consideration for all these things, not only based on scriptures, but based on the Ayurvedic and so many other things, because people getting married to the same gotra or from the same family and the same these things, they get some kind of, you know, mentally they have some recession and all, they have all kinds of terminologies to signify the effects of marrying in the same gotra and the same among relatives and all that. And another important criteria for marriage is age. What should be the age of the boy and that of the girl? Actually, this is also another controversial thing, because we are all now talking everything based on the scriptures and the tradition. So let us not try to apply these things to the modern system and say, oh, you said like this, but how this is happening and all. These are all different things. We are only trying to understand how our marriage system has been propagated and given in our scriptures. So Kanyaka Dhanam, it is called Kanyaka Dhanam because the person should be a Kanya. Because the marriage is called Kanyaka Dhanam, she should be a Kanya. And each age has a particular name. For example, Ashtavarsha Bhavet Gauri. So if a person is, the girl is 80 years old, she is called Gauri. Navavarshatu Rohini. She is called Rohini when she turns 9 years. And Dasavarsha Bhavet Kanya, that is her name. When she becomes 10 years, she is called a Kanya. So Kanyadana, when we say, the girl should be at least 10 years old. That is what scriptures say. So a 10-year-old girl, so young age, at a very young age, the person is, you know, getting married. Actually, the system was, you know, banned and all those things, you know, Raja Ram Mohan Rai, you know, all these things, all these people, they brought social reforms in the system by avoiding this marriage of such young ages. But according to the scripture, the Kanya means a person who is 10 years old in age. And there is a shloka in Manusmriti which says, you know, the life is divided into four parts. They assume a life which is a full life is not supposed to be of 100 years. 100 years a person lives, it is supposed to be, it was divided into four parts. So chaturtham ayusho bhagam, 1/4 of life. That must be, you know, for a person, for what it should be? Vasitva guru kule. So 1/4 of one's life, the first quarter of one's life is supposed to be spent in the Gurukula. So learning so many things and all, being with the teacher and learning not only the scriptures but also ways of life, so many things and all. So the 25 years, then we get a hint here that 25 years becomes a marriageable age for the boy. He is spending in the Gurukula. Then ayusho bhagam, the kritadharaha, the next 25 years, 25 years to 50 years of life, this person gets into this sannyasa, the grahastashrama. And then 50 onwards up to 75, he spends this vanaprastha ashrama, and 75 to the 100, so chaturtham ayusho bhagam tyaktva sangan parivrajet, the person should give up everything and then become a sannyasi. So that is how they gave this four different quarters for one's life. So the first quarter for Gurukulam, 25 years. So you put the marriageable age for the boy becomes, let us say, 25 years. Then for the girl, they said the marriageable age is as early as 10 years. So the girl should be, that means what? The girl should be younger to the boy. So how they have given a shloka for that? Balarko homadhumascha balastri nirmalodakam. So balarkaha means the morning sun. Arkaha means the sun. The balarkaha means morning sun. Morning sun will not burn a person. It is very mild. So morning sun. And homa dhumascha. Dhumaha means the smoke. The smoke of arising from a homa. So homa dhumascha. And balastri, a girl who is younger to the boy. Nirmalodakam, and the pure water. So they are all supposed to be good for a person. And ratrau kshiranna buktischa, in the night a person should take rice with milk, not with yogurt and all, rice. So kshiranna buktischa ayur vriddhi dine dine, the person's life improves day by day. So what are the factors? Balarkaha, so one should be in the early morning sun, balarkaha. Homadhumascha, the smoke, he should be surrounded by the smoke of arising from good homas, yajnas and all. And balastri, he should be married to a girl much younger to him or younger to him. And nirmalodakam, water which is pure. Ratrau kshirana buktischa, in the night if he takes only food with milk, for that person ayurvriddhi, his life improves dine dine, by day, every day. And the opposite to this is what? Vriddharko pretadumascha vriddhastri palvalodakam ratrau dadhyanna buktischa ayuhu kshinam dine dine. So for a person, vriddharko means the afternoon sun, which is very hot, and that kind of sun. Pretadumascha, the smoke coming out of burning the dead body. Pretadumascha. Vriddhastri, if he is married to a girl who is much elder to him in age. And palvalodakam, water which is not good, which is impure and all that. And ratrau dadhyanna buktischa, in the night he takes food with very good yogurt, thick yogurt. So that person, ayuhu kshinam dine dine, his life is deteriorating every day. It's not supposed to be healthy for this person. So balastri, the girl should be younger to the boy in age. So that is one angle from these things. And the the so many other considerations were also given in terms of the girl, when the girl is younger in age, and when this girl goes to the father's house, the father-in-law's house, then this girl, because she is young, she is not opinionated yet. So there she will be able to adopt with those people by show of love and all that thing very easily. She is not going to be telling, oh, in my house it is like this, in my house it is this way. So if you keep on, if you keep telling once or twice, perhaps, you know, the husband will say, okay, if you keep on telling it, that is better there, here and all the time, then it might be irritable perhaps. So whereas at a young child, the child is not biased yet in thinking, so the child will be able to adopt. This is all according to our scriptures, according to the tradition. So that is how they made it that way those days. So early age, adjustment of the girl to the new environment in the boy's family is better, is even more adaptable than later. So these are the various considerations in the choice of the boy and girl. And now the marriage itself is, there are 8 different types of marriages. So ashtavidha vivaha, there are 8 different types of marriages, and today we are going to only mention the names of the 8 different types of marriage, and in the next webinar we will describe each one of them and go through the actual marriage ritual. There are four types of marriage which are considered to be acceptable in our system. And there are other 4 types of marriages which are condemned in our system. And what are the first 4 which are accepted? They are called the Brahma Vivaha, then Prajapatya Vivaha, and Daiva Vivaha, and Arsha Vivaha. So all these 4, Brahma Vivaha, Prajapatya Vivaha, Daiva Vivaha, and Arsha Vivaha, all these 4 are considered acceptable in our tradition. And there are next 4 which are rejected in the scriptures. One is Gandharva Vivaha, next is Asura Vivaha, and the third one is Rakshasa Vivaha and Paishacha Vivaha. All those 4 are not accepted, but the Gandharva Vivaha alone is accepted for Kshatriyas particularly. For Kshatriyas, Gandharva Vivaha also is accepted, but the other 3 are not accepted, namely the Asura Vivaha, Rakshasa Vivaha, and Paishacha Vivaha. All 3 are not accepted. So these are the 8 different types of marriages, but most popular among all of them is the Brahma Vivaha, considered to be the highest one, and the mantras, etc., they are all given for this marriage system. We are going to see some of them, not a whole lot, because I don't want unnecessarily to take the time in talking too much about the mantra portion, except for the significance of them. So these are the 8 different types of vivaha, and we will take each one of them, but give more emphasis on the Brahma Vivaha and explain that in detail in the next webinar. यो वेदादौ स्वरप्रोक्तो वेदान्ते च प्रतिष्ठितः तस्य प्रकृतिलीनस्य यः परः स महेश्वरः श्रीकृष्णार्पणम्।